Okay, we're live.
Good evening, everyone. I would like to call the January 11th study session of the University City City Council to order. You have before you the agenda for tonight's regular meeting. Are there any changes to the agenda either by the city manager or members of council? Hearing none, let's move forward, Mr. Rose, with the Washington University Fiscal Impact Report.
Honorable Mayor and Council Members, we contracted with Tischler Weiss last year to conduct a study of the fiscal impact that Washington University is having on the city of University City and its residents. Tonight, we have Carson Weiss here with us of Tischler Weiss that will provide us with the information from that study. I want to also highlight that you created a subcommittee to vet the study prior to it being brought to a study session. We've concluded our work with the subcommittee and believe that this information is ready for the mayor and council to consider. So I will turn things over to Mr. Weiss. And Mr. Weiss, if you might just do a brief introduction of kind of your background.
Sure. Well, good evening, Mayor, members of council. I'm Carson Weiss, president of Tischler Weiss. And that's, I think most of you, I think about a year and a half ago when I was there to do a brief work session with you all on fiscal impact analysis in general. Our firm is very unique in that we are the only national firm that has a unique practice that looks solely at cost of growth issues. And we've done more of these kind of fiscal studies than any firm in the country. And we've also done quite a bit of university-related fiscal and economic evaluations. And I'm here tonight to walk you through our findings of the impact of WashU on the city of University City. So let me see if I can actually share my screen here. I've got a new computer here, so let's see. Let's see here. Here we go. You guys see this?
Yes.
Okay, great. For a second there, I was telling me I was going to have to quit Zoom and log back in. So as Mr. Rose mentioned, we have had two briefings with the, I believe it's the Finance Committee, to talk about the findings. And I have given you a brief overview of our firm. We do specialize in fiscal and economic analysis, capital improvement planning and impact fees and infrastructure financing strategies. So the approach we used in this analysis is what we call a cost of land uses approach, where we look at these discrete land use categories, such as, you know, apartment or single family house or retail or office or institutional uses. And then we use the current fiscal year budget in order to determine direct costs and revenues for these various land uses. So it's what we call a snapshot approach in time. So it's a way to allocate costs of the current budget to all the land uses within the city. And this is just the properties owned by WashU within the city of University City. Now, limitations to this approach are, you know, that we're not doing a case study marginal approach where we're looking at a scenario citywide over time, or just the impacts of these university-owned properties over time. So it relies on average costing, particularly for one-time capital-related costs. So we are using I think we're into a new fiscal year, but we were using the FY 2020 adopted annual operating budget as the basis for cost and revenue allocation. We did have meetings with the major service providers within the city to talk about, you know, where do you have fixed costs? Are there, you know, anomalies about about the properties owned by the university that make you, provide your services in a different way than you what you would to a normal residential or a normal retail or a normal institutional type use. We did look at the measures, or we measured the impact on the city's tax supported funds. So we're not including enterprise funds. We're not including, internal service funds or special revenue funds. So we're looking at general fund, the public safety sales tax fund, the capital improvement fund, and the park and stormwater fund. So what we were able to do is we worked with the city to determine what parcels were owned by the city, and more importantly, what land use category did they fall into? So from a residential perspective, we had a total of 6 single family residences, a total of 491 multifamily units, and then a total of 27 properties that were just classified on the tax rolls as, institutional. And we were also able to use the tax data to determine, well, what is their assessed value today? And then we determined, based on, Institute of Transportation Engineers data on trip generation, and then localized American Community Survey data published by the U.S. Census Bureau, specific to the city of University City, to determine these demand indicators, whether it be average daily vehicle trips or persons per household, and the estimated population within those 6 single family units and the 491 different multifamily units. We also did the same thing for non-residential uses that are owned by the university. And that included about 59,000 square feet of retail space, about 15,000 square feet of office space, about 36,000 square feet of industrial space, and about 118,000 square feet of what could be classified as institutional uses. So we look at the total assessed value there. And then again, using employment density factors that we can derive from national standards, we determined, well, the typical retail, 1,000 square feet of retail generates so many jobs. And so we were able to estimate jobs for these different types of uses, as well as estimate average daily vehicle trips. So this table summarizes the net fiscal results by fund. If you remember, I mentioned that we looked at the general fund, the public safety sales tax fund, capital improvement sales tax fund, as well as parks and stormwater. So the university owned properties cost the city in fiscal year 2020 approximately $2 million, while generating only about $1 million in revenue. And none of that revenue comes from property taxes. The majority of it comes from sales taxes, we'll talk about as we go on. You will see that from a residential perspective, the general fund, we have net deficits generated. We also have net deficits generated to the public safety sales tax fund, slight surpluses to the capital improvement sales tax fund, and slight surpluses to the park and stormwater sales tax fund. Now, from a non-residential perspective, we're generating deficits to the general fund, the public safety sales tax, and the capital improvement sales tax, with slight surpluses generated to parks and stormwater. So one of the things we looked at is the foregone property tax. So what this means is, based on the assessed value information that we have, and the fact that what we normally see in a university community is that institutional uses are just that. They are institutional uses used for truly university related activities, whether it's research and development or office space or actual education space. You are foregoing that property tax revenue, but you're also foregoing property tax revenue on non-institutional type uses. So, there are single family residential units owned by the university, multifamily units. And so we are estimating that you are foregoing about $79,821 in residential property tax, and about $330,000 or almost $331,000 in non-residential property tax. So a total of $410,736 in property taxes. Now, in terms of the highlights in our analysis, the university-owned properties generate a deficit of about about $1 million annually. And the majority of this is to the general fund. Of that deficit, the residential uses generate the largest deficit, about $743,000 annually. And the non-residential deficit is about $310,000. The general fund deficit totals $676,000 for the residential properties compared to $258,000 for the non-residential properties. The police and fire expenditures account for the greatest general fund expenditures, followed by public works. The public safety sales tax fund has net deficits of about $88,000 or almost $89,000 for residential properties. And the university-owned properties generate an annual net deficit of about $44,000. Oops, I think we're on the wrong slide here. Okay. University-owned residential properties generate a net surplus of about $10,000 to the capital improvement sales tax fund. The non-residential properties generate a net deficit of about $15,000. Because this sales tax is pooled, the city receives its distribution based on population. Therefore, the non-residential development receives no credit for this sales tax generation. And the university-owned residential properties also generate a net surplus of about $11,000 to the Parks and Stormwater Tax Fund, and the non-residential properties own are generating net surplus of about almost $8,000. And the non-residential properties generate a surplus because there are no costs assumed with non-residential development, since these expenditures are almost entirely park related. And in most jurisdictions we work in, unless you're a net importer of jobs, 100% of the demand for for park-related infrastructure and services is a function of residential development. Well, one of the things that I'm sure you've seen is that the university has taken our study and done a critique of it, and some of their points are valid, but we certainly have an explanation for that. And it's clear, and this is their major point, and it's clear that WashU has a tremendous economic impact on the city. No one is denying that. And that's the case in all of the university communities we work in. But there's a difference between economic impact and fiscal impact. And a lot of times we see that term used interchangeably in public forums, but it's important to note that the fiscal impact is really the cash flow to the public sector. So, what are the costs? What are the revenues generated by that use that trickle down directly to the jurisdiction in question? The economic impacts, frankly, can transcend jurisdictional boundaries. For instance, Washington University has economic impacts that are probably in certain sectors statewide in their impact. Others are regional, others are countywide, and then others are citywide. So it's important that we distinguish between fiscal and economic, because just because the economic impacts are X, that doesn't mean that that directly trickles down to direct revenue to the city. And no one's denying the economic impact, as we've stated in our response to that critique. But the analysis shows that, much like a lot of the communities we work in, that tax-exempt status is placing a significant fiscal impact on the burden, or a burden on the city. So regardless of that economic activity that's happening citywide, region-wide, county-wide, it's still placing a burden on the ability of the city to provide services and facilities. And certainly, it's very rare that we have seen a university that has been as aggressive at owning non-institutional uses in the way that Washington University has. And this proliferation of off-campus university-owned property represents not only lost revenue to the city, but there's an opportunity cost involved there in terms of significantly greater revenue from privately funded projects from private investors that have a possibility of generating a greater density, a greater intensity, a significant value added in terms of its amenities that can not only provide increased property tax from that value added and that density, but also increase retail spending within the community. So it truly is a very significant lost opportunity cost that you're not getting because of this proliferation of university-owned properties. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions that the council may have.
Can we please move from the sharing of the screen back so I can see everybody?
Sure.
And I will then ask my colleagues who may already be lining up questions that they may have for Carson.
Are we off screen sharing?
You are off screen sharing. Yes, I can see everyone.
Excellent.
Who would like to begin? Mr. Hales.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation and particularly the level of detail in the report. So I have two questions that are kind of connected, and it might be outside of the scope. But one of the things I've heard about one of the benefits of WashU is the student population and how that contributes to our census data. That's never really comported with me as someone who did not grew up in St. Louis, went to college out of state. Very few of the people I went to college with actually established like their residency out of state. When I was in college, we actually did have a census. Most people didn't participate. So I was wondering like if there was any discussion at all on that. And then the other impact I think you just touched on a little bit, but not in the terms that I'm going to ask is, are you able to capture at all the impact? I know you know how many students effectively live in some of these residential apartment units that are owned by the university, but what is the impact to when they leave over the summer? And when we're talking about the Loop, we have lots of restaurants and bars and entertainment district. Is there a negative impact? What is it? Is it even, can it be quantified that we have X percentage of a very centrally located population of students that vacate that area over the summer months for the most part?
Yeah, those are all good questions. And so, first of all, it's impossible for us to determine based on the census data how many of the residents are university students versus non-university students, because you know, one of the problems is the university has properties in I think two jurisdictions. So it's very easy in Lawrence, Kansas, where we can determine how many students of the population how much of the population are actually university students, right? It's not as easy in University City. So we can estimate based on only the properties that we know the university owns, assuming those residential properties are occupied by university students, which I don't think, I doubt that, and if somebody may have other information, but I doubt the university owns residential units to which they're renting to families or professionals. I would assume they are renting to university students. And there are probably, multitude of other properties within the city that have university students. So we don't have a way to determine that. Also, we also don't have a way to determine what the impact is for a 3-month period during the summer when, maybe trade is down at certain restaurants or bars. But that's really not an issue relative to our study because we are looking at a year's worth of revenue, a year's worth of expenditures. And so we're looking at a yearly population versus a monthly or quarterly population. So that your second question is sort of, you know, it's in the numbers already, but there's no way to truly gauge your first question.
Understood. That's about what I thought. So understood. Thank you.
You're muted.
Mr. Clay.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you for the presentation. I had a question about the ability, prep, maybe even cost, just in a relative sense, of trying to understand isolate the individual economic impact in University City. You said, I think I understand this, that economic impact can have a state, can be quantified at the state level, county level, perhaps even for some institutions, even a national level. Clearly, we're not interested in that. We're interested in what happens in University City. How difficult would it be to isolate that? This is more of a curiosity than anything else.
Yeah, it's not that difficult. You know, it's obviously it's its own analysis, but I think it's relatively easier for University City because you don't have the lion's share of the university within your boundaries. So it's relatively easy compared to looking at it for, like, again, I'm going to use Lawrence, Kansas as an example because we're working there. Then you have to start interviewing you have to have access to all of those university departments to really get an idea of their scope of operations. You know, it's not like you have, you know, the entire university on your campus. I mean, it's basically, you know, a few truly institutional uses that are associated with the university and then just other properties that they own. So it'd be relatively simple to do.
Honorable Mayor, Councilmember Clay, if I could just add on to what Carson has indicated. We asked for information from the university because I know that economic impact is important to them. Also that they conduct, I believe it's on an annual basis, an economic impact, but they look regionally at the impact. And so I didn't know if they were able to carve out just University City so that we would have some ability to at least gauge what they believe is the economic impact that they have on a university city, but have not received that. But I do want to highlight again, the economic impact is very different, as Carson has indicated, from fiscal impact, which means direct fiscal impact, meaning direct dollars that would come to the city of University City that enables us to provide services.
Oh, and City Manager Rose, I certainly understand that. And I think it serves us well, though, to somewhat to your point, to be prepared with understanding of those economic impact dynamics, because that's that is the rebuttal. And so I think it would behoove us to have some understanding of those dynamics ourselves, should it come up, which inevitably it will. Thank you.
Well, I would think we're seeing a little bit of the difference in their economic impact now, except for the, it's amazing to hear the restaurants in the Loop talk about the amount of food delivery that is being done to the WashU students who are still in their apartments. So that's a little bit amazing, but I do wonder, with the lack of students on campus, the economic impact. But more, my actual question for you, Carson, is, if you've been in this sandbox before, what strategies have you seen implemented where you have an institution that does own this much property and it would make more sense likely for some of the property not to be held in a not-for-profit status, but to be held on a for-profit status? Have you seen strategies implemented that have changed that dynamic?
Well, that's a good question. And unfortunately, I haven't, because, you know, I've never seen a situation like this where normally it's the traditional, you know, like Evanston, Illinois, where, you know, the university and the city have an adversarial relationship. And, you know, the city says, well, you know, you've got this much impact on us from a public safety perspective. And the university's like, well, yeah, screw you. We've got all this economic impact, right? And I've never seen a situation where there's this spillover. And I'm not, I mean, I don't want to be accusatory, but there are uses that truly aren't university related where they're taking advantage of their tax exempt status, which obviously has implications to you because you only have, you know, a limited amount of land. Now, in terms of mitigation strategies, some communities and universities come to an agreement where, you know, there is this acknowledgement that, yeah, we have this economic impact, and you benefit from it. And the city says, yeah, well, you're right, we do. But we also have this real cost, and generally it's public safety related. And so there's an agreement made or a negotiation, and there's some sort of pilot or payment in lieu of taxes that go to offset some of these mitigations. And then in other communities, it's just, you know, a complete, you know, breakdown, like in Chapel Hill where we've worked. I mean, the city acts like they're doing the university a favor by tolerating it. And then you're like, well, you wouldn't have Chapel Hill if it weren't for the University of North Carolina. So it's sort of a chicken and egg kind of thing. So it's all over the map. And again, I haven't seen it like this, where they're, you know, buying, you know, different properties and using that tax exempt status. So I really don't have an answer for you.
if you were talking about the payment in lieu of taxes discussion, do you have examples of who implemented that?
I mean, I don't have it at the tip of my tongue, but I can certainly give you that. I mean, but the good news is that, and I'm just, let me look at my spreadsheet here. So let me do some quick math. I mean, the good news is their impact is somewhat de minimis. I mean, if you look at, let me make sure I'm correct before I state this. Yeah. I mean, their impact, I mean, their the lost revenue that you guys are foregoing, or their net impact, not the law, not the foregone property tax, but their net impact. When you look at all the revenue they bring in versus the expenditures, it's about 2.8 to 3% of your total tax supported budget. So it's not like it's, you know, I'm not going to say it's a rounding error, because it's great. I mean, I consider a rounding error anything less than 1%. But it's not like it's 10% of your total general fund budget or your tax supported budget. So keep that in. It's always nice to put those things into perspective.
No, I agree, and I appreciate the perspective. The one thing I keep coming back to, though, as I have this elder status here a little bit, is that, you know, I think if you're sitting here at WashU, and, you know, again, a wonderful institution, but the best thing they have going for them is they just get to wait.
Right. And to my point earlier, I mean, we were able to get for police and fire university property specific data, and they criticized us for that, saying, hey, you stacked the deck by, you know, having property specific data for the two most expensive services you provide, but for other services, you're using sort of these citywide averages. But, you know, to be fair, we're not able to you know, you can't talk to the finance department or the planning department or the IT department and say, you know, how many university related customers did you provide? It's much easier for fire and police to sort that type of data. And it's clear that they generate a higher response rate than the average land use within the city. And that's not surprising given what we've seen.
Right. Communities.
So, and I don't think it's any surprise to anybody here.
What other questions from other members of council?
Mayor.
Mr. Cusick.
Thank you, Mayor. Carson, you had a chance to look at the 2015 report that was done by our UCity residents, the University City of Washington University report. Were you able to look at that in detail and make a comment on the accuracy or corroborate that the information in that report would match what your findings were?
I have looked at that report, but it's been a number of months and I can't recall. I mean, most of it was economic related, as I recall. I can't make that statement without going back and looking at it right now.
Okay. And these reports show what University City is losing, or the economic and the fiscal impact on University City. Would you be able to make any statements about how this is impacting the individual residents in University City? And I know that part of your report did not look at what the impact is on the residents and the taxes they pay based on what the school board needs in University School. And there's a loss of revenue that exists that, even though the university schools will receive the same amount of money, they just have to increase the amount of the percentage of taxes for the residents to compensate for that. It's not necessarily a fiscal loss to University City, but it is a burden on the residents, and it is increasing the residents' tax burden. And that's something that hasn't been discussed. Would you care to make any comments about that?
Yeah, you're exactly right. And I will say I'm ignorant to the revenue structure, particularly of the school board. But I think they get more property tax than they get sales tax. Is that fair?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. It's where you guys are more reliant on sales tax. They're more reliant on property tax. It's very similar to Arizona and other places we work. So you're exactly right. So existing residents are most likely subsidizing the university at a greater level at the county. And because I'm assuming if you're a city resident, you also pay county's property taxes, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So there's probably a larger subsidy on the county and the school board than there is on the city, because you are fortunate that you have different sales taxes. Some of them are situs based or point of sale, and others are a formula where it's basically driven by population.
Understood.
Existing residents are subsidizing the university to about the tune of about $1 million a year.
Councilmember Cusick, your question, I think, regarding the impact on the school district, where that's a part of the global impact on University City residents, was outside of, we considered it, but it was outside of the scope of what we had engaged Tishler Bice to conduct.
Understood, and I agree exactly. However, there still is something that hasn't been spoken about, and that's the fiscal impact on the residents by Washington University.
Romeo, Councilmember Cusick, that is correct. Our study primarily focused on the impact on the city of University City. That was the scope of it.
Yeah,
certainly there could be other studies that are performed, not necessarily by the city, but certainly the school district, to determine what would be the fiscal impact that Washington University had on the school district.
And I agree with that. What I will add, though, is that the school really has no motivation. They're still getting the same amount of money. The schools aren't really losing money. It's the residents that are losing money. So I don't really see that the school district has an issue with this. And maybe there is no way to resolve. I realize there's no way to resolve this this evening, but I think it needs to be put out there that this disparity still exists between the residents and Washington University. And again, it's not going to be the school district that's going to do anything about it. They're still getting the same amount of money, regardless of what Washington University is or is not paying. They're not losing money.
Any other questions of Carson?
Mayor.
Mr. Hales.
Just as a follow-up, I agree with a great deal of what Tim said, but I think that's true of all the taxing districts. All the taxing districts, everybody's getting their money. The issue is across the board. It's the residents who are making up all of the money that is not on the tax rolls that are, as Mr. Bice said, not institutional. That the vast majority are not institutional buildings, as you would think of a university building as being. They are residential buildings that have become spillover. So I think it's an important point to note overall, particularly that this is different from, as he said, pretty much everything he's looked at. And I do think it's important that we not forget that there, you know, there is an impact to the city, but as Mr. Cusick said, ultimately the impact falls on our residents, and we have a very diverse community in every way you can cover the word diverse. But we have folks that you know are in a tough spot in some areas, and when they see this granite palace just to the south of us that is not paying taxes on what is effectively a real estate company, it's a challenge. So I think what Councilmember Cusick said is very worthy of being noted. I understand why it was not included. There's a lot of moving pieces to this and a lot of aspects, but I just wanted to make that statement.
Anything else from any of my colleagues? Mr. Smotherson.
Thank you, Mayor Crow. And this may not be a question for Mr. Bice. I hope I said that correctly. But it's just an overall question. And I do appreciate the presentation. I think you've given a number to something that we've already known. And but my question is just an overall question, is what's next? What do we do with this? Where are we going with this? You know, is my question, and I'm kind of curious about that, because WashU is WashU, so I'll stop, but go ahead.
Honorable Mayor Pro Tem Smotherson, next steps would be, first, my intention is to place on your January 25th agenda an item that would enable you to accept the report, which basically means just closing it out. But as a part of that discussion, it's also my intention to recommend allowing myself and the mayor to schedule a series of meetings with the chancellor and his team to start discussions about how do we best address the deficits that clearly exist. And again, to respond to any questions that they may have regarding the study, if they still have outstanding questions. As included in your item was the report from WashU and the response that we provided to them to address the concerns that they raised. I believe also that you have a committee that is looking at zoning type of issues. And as a part of that, one of the things that they're looking at are the impacts of multifamily housing. So two steps to take. One is to conclude our discussions with that zoning committee, subcommittee that you have. But primarily, I'd certainly be interested in sitting down with representatives from Washington University to see if there are ways of addressing this, the deficits that we have that would be agreeable to both sides.
May I ask a question? And the question that I ask is, this is nothing against, I definitely understand your plan. Could the preliminary meeting be all of us? And I don't have anything against you and the mayor meeting with them. And I you know, the mayor's a great businessman, you know, and you, sir, are in your position. You know, I just would like to kind of, and I don't mean that we have to continually meet if there's a way to initially meet, because there may be points that each of us have, if you understand what I'm saying. Oh, I'm just kind of opening that door because somebody else may have something. Councilman Cusick may have a point of that he would bring up, just like he brought up tonight, that nobody else addressed. If that's all I'm saying.
I would look at that. I think that the intention is to start a dialogue with Washington University, and it would be difficult, but not impossible, but certainly challenging to try and have a dialogue with their representatives and, you know, seven members of the council. I would suspect that if it is agreeable to the council to allow myself and the mayor to have those discussions, then we would certainly be reporting back to you. This would likely qualify as an executive session item, because the end goal would be to reach a contractual agreement with them. So we would likely be updating you routinely on how those discussions were advancing. And then you would have an opportunity to share your thoughts or concerns with any component that you might have an interest in.
Sure, thank you. Thank you.
Anything else? Ms. Klein.
I just wonder if it's appropriate to have at any stage in these dialogues and discussion, a member of the press be involved in any of these discussions. You know, just because I think, you know, it seems like there, you know, when it's just us, you know, the university and the city, you know, they don't mind, you know, when I read over those comments that they made about the report, I just thought if I were a citizen and read that, it doesn't suffice. It doesn't make me feel like that's a sufficient answer. So my question is just, what is the appropriateness of pursuing something like that in the future?
It's agreeable to the mayor and council for us to open a dialogue with Washington University. I think that likely the first meeting will establish kind of parameters about how that negotiation is going to work. Certainly they are aware that any agreement that we reach with them has to be presented to the public. So that seems like an easy one. Certainly the press would be aware of that. But I would know more about what would be agreeable to them after the initial discussion.
Okay.
I understand Alita's point completely and would parallel that with also a way to get the message to the student body as much as to the administration. It seems that at times that when the students become engaged, it seems that we have more of a response from Washington University than we do when it is just us asking. So all points well made. Any other questions of Mr. Bice? Hearing none, I will, Mr. Bice, thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Appreciate your work. to the city manager. Unless you have anything else, we will adjourn the study session and we'll then be opening up the regular session in about 15 minutes. Thank you.
It's Carson.